But at length, when Antiochus had beaten Ptolemy, he seized upon Judea. The Jews of their own accord went over to him and received him into the city, and gave him plentiful provision to all his army and to his elephants, and readily assisted him when he besieged the garrison which was in the citadel of Jerusalem. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 39, Elephants and the Other Antiochus. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. The time has come to speak of elephants. Elephants are truly wondrous creatures, and for those interested in elephants, I would strongly recommend a lengthy, fascinating article in the journal The New Atlantis titled, Do Elephants Have Souls? The piece truly highlights some of the most inspiring and touching aspects of elephant life. And yet, the hard truth is that during the classical period, elephants were wielded as weapons of war, and terrifying ones at that. And Jews would be eyewitnesses to the elephant wars. For while Jerusalem and Judea had been ruled for some years by the Ptolemaic dynasty, it would be its rival, the descendants of another of Alexander's generals, Seleucus, who would contest this territory and ultimately seize it. In these battles, the descendants of Ptolemy, all named Ptolemy, who ruled from Egypt, wielded African elephants, and the Seleucids utilized Asian elephants. Most famous among these battles was one fought at Rafah in Gaza in 2017 BCE, where the African elephants of Ptolemy IV were reported to have fled before the Asian elephants of the Seleucids. But Ptolemy, nevertheless, won the battle and reportedly sought to celebrate in Jerusalem. This set the stage for one of the most interesting elephant stories in Jewish literature. It is told in the work known as the Third Book of Maccabees, though, as everyone points out, it is not about the Maccabees. This text is not part of the Jewish biblical canon, and Josephus tells the tale about a different Ptolemy than that described in this work. However literally one chooses to accept the story, it does highlight how scary the elephants of the Greeks were to the Jews of Judea. And it signifies, perhaps, that Jews, while still ruled by the descendants of Ptolemy, began to hope for a different ruling dynasty for Judea, which, as we will see, will ultimately arrive and bring elephants into the area of the sacred city. The Third Book of Maccabees describes an exultant Ptolemy IV, after the Battle of Rafah, coming to Jerusalem and seeking to enter the temple's Holy of Holies. The Jews, of course, refused. Quote, when they said that this was not permitted because not even members of their own nation were allowed to enter, nor even all of the priests, but only the high priest who was preeminent over all, and he only once a year, the king was by no means persuaded. Even after the law had been read to him, he did not cease to maintain that he ought to enter, saying, even if those men are deprived of this honor, I ought not to be. And he inquired why, when he entered every other temple, no one there had stopped him. And someone heedlessly said that it was wrong to take this as a sign in itself. But since this has happened, the king said, why should not I at least enter, whether they wish it or not? End quote. Here we see a controversy that will come up again and again in the Jewish clash with Greece and Rome. The Jews do not seek to forcibly convert the world. They ask to be allowed to worship God in one temple, in one sacred site on earth, according to their laws. It is this that, according to the story, Ptolemy sought to violate. According to this book of Maccabees, however, a miracle paralyzes the king, and he is dragged from the sacred precincts. Upon returning to Alexandria, he ultimately decides to punish the Jews there that remain loyal to their faith. Quote, then the king, completely inflexible, was filled with overpowering anger and wrath, so he summoned Hermon, keeper of the elephants, and ordered him on the following day to drug all the elephants, 500 in number, with large handfuls of frankincense and plenty of unmixed wine, and to drive them in maddened by the lavish abundance of liquor, so that the Jews might meet their doom. When he had given these orders, he returned to his feasting, together with those of his friends and of the army who were especially hostile toward the Jews, and Hermon, keeper of the elephants, proceeded faithfully to carry out the orders. End quote. Elephants, drugged and made drunk with undiluted wine. In the Greco-Roman world, wine was not drunk without water. That was considered barbaric. To give elephants wine such as this was intended to inspire madness and terror and to drive them to trample the Jews. However, before the decree is carried out, the king is again miraculously made drowsy by the divine. Quote, but the Lord sent upon the king a portion of sleep, that beneficence which from the beginning night and day is bestowed by him who grants it to whomever he wishes. And by the action of the Lord, he was overcome by so pleasant and deep a sleep that he quite failed in his lawless purpose and was completely frustrated in his inflexible plan, end quote. The elephant rampage was rescheduled, and miraculously, again, the king this time forgot about the decree in the first place. Thus, the rampage had to be set for another time. And at this moment, the Jews had every reason to expect that the terrible decree would be carried out. Quote, finally, the moment was arranged again, the elephants made drunk. Now when the beasts had been brought virtually to a state of madness, so to speak, by the very fragrant draughts of wine mixed with frankincense and had been equipped with frightful devices, the elephant keeper entered at about dawn into the courtyard, the city now being filled with countless masses of people crowding their way into the hippodrome, and urged the king on to the matter at hand. So he, when he had filled his impious mind with a deep rage, rushed out in full force along with the beasts, wishing to witness with invulnerable heart and with his own eyes the grievous and pitiful destruction of the aforementioned people. And when the Jews saw the dust raised by the elephants going out at the gate, and by the following armed forces as well as by the trampling of the crowd, and heard the loud and tumultuous noise, they thought that this was their last moment of life, the end of their most miserable suspense. And giving way to lamentation and groans, they kissed each other, embracing relatives and falling into one another's arms, parents and children, mothers and daughters, and others with babies at their breasts who were drawing their last milk, end quote. At this point in the story, in this book of Maccabees, one priest, one Kohen, reminds all the Jews assembled of the miracles in their past and of the possibility of supernatural salvation, even against the most fearsome forces of nature. After all, he argues, Daniel was saved from the lions and Jonah from the fish. And in this story, salvation does occur again, with the elephants turning on the enemies of the Jews. Quote, and when the Jews observed this, they raised great cries to heaven so that even the nearby valleys resounded with them and brought an uncontrollable terror upon the army. Then the most glorious, almighty, and true God revealed his holy face and opened the heavenly gates, from which two glorious angels of fearful aspect descended, visible to all but the Jews. They opposed the forces of the enemy and filled them with confusion and terror, binding them with immovable shackles. Even the king began to shudder bodily, and he forgot his sullen insolence. The beasts turned back upon the armed forces following them and began trampling and destroying them. End quote. Thus, in this story, the Jews are saved from the elephants of Ptolemy IV, with the elephants becoming the defenders of the Jews themselves. However literally one takes this story, it perhaps expresses to us that at some point the Jews had assumed that they could no longer rely on the Ptolemaic rulers of Jerusalem for their safety. And this would allow us to understand why, when a Seleucid emperor took Jerusalem, the Jews readily supported him. The name of this Seleucid monarch was Antiochus, but this is not the Antiochus IV that is the villain of the Hanukkah story. Rather, it is his father, Antiochus III, known as Antiochus the Great, for his resuscitation of the power of the Seleucids and the extension of his empire, including over Judea. Once Antiochus the Great conquers Jerusalem, the descendants of Ptolemy will never rule the sacred city again. And for Josephus, Antiochus III, Antiochus the Great, was truly great to the Jews as well, reciprocating the welcome that was shown to him. He writes, quote, but at length when Antiochus had beaten Ptolemy, he seized upon Judea. And Josephus adds, the Jews of their own accord went over to him and received him into the city and gave him plentiful provision to all his army and to his elephants and readily assisted him when he besieged the garrison which was in the citadel of Jerusalem. Wherefore Antiochus thought it but just to requite the Jews' diligence and zeal in his service. End quote. Thus did elephants end up entering Jerusalem or its vicinity, not in war, but in peace, welcomed by the Jews of the sacred city. It must have been an amazing sight. And if Jews had felt that their religious rights had been violated in Jerusalem by the descendants of Ptolemy, then that would explain the announcement, according to Josephus, issued by the Seleucid king Antiochus III, which went as follows. Quote, King Antiochus the Ptolemy sendeth greeting. Since the Jews, upon our first entrance on their country, demonstrated their friendship towards us, and when we came to their city, received us in a splendid manner, and came to meet us with their senate, and gave abundance of provisions to our soldiers and to the elephants, and joined with us in ejecting the garrison of the Egyptians that were in the citadel, we have thought fit to reward them and to retrieve the condition of their city, which hath been greatly depopulated by such accidents as have befallen its inhabitants, and to bring those that have been scattered abroad back to the city. And if in the first place we have determined on account of their piety towards God to bestow on them as a pension for their sacrifices of animals that are fit for sacrifice, for wine, oil, and frankincense, the value of 20,000 pieces of silver, and 6 sacred artabae of fine flour, with 1,460 medimni of wheat and 375 medimni of salt. And these payments I would have fully paid them as I have sent orders to you. I would also have the work about the temple finished and the cloisters, and if there be anything else that ought to be rebuilt." End quote. Thus, if Ptolemy did violate the temple in some way, then the proclamations of Antiochus restoring the temple and privileging Jewish rights there makes even more sense. And according to Josephus, Antiochus III added, quote, "It shall be lawful for no foreigner to come within the limits of the temple round about, which thing is forbidden also to the Jews, unless to those who, according to their own custom, have purified themselves." End quote. This Antiochus, Antiochus III, is long forgotten by most Jews because his name, Antiochus, has been long associated with the next king of the Seleucid dynasty, one who will act very differently toward the Jews and toward Jerusalem. And thus we have a parallel to other episodes in Jewish history. For consider, there was a pharaoh in Egypt who esteemed Joseph, and then a pharaoh who knew not Joseph. The Jews knew a Persian king like Cyrus, and one like Ahasuerus. There was an Antiochus that may well have embraced the Jewish right to the Temple Mount and to the temple. And then there was another Antiochus who would assault the temple and who, as we will see, turned his own elephants against the Jews in his attempt to paganize Jerusalem. Thus, the stage is set for the beginning of the Hanukkah story and the rise of the Hasmoneans, now known popularly as the Maccabees. It is this story which we shall begin to tell next week, with more important stories about elephants and elephant battles yet to come. The most famous military maneuver involving elephants is Hannibal's crossing of the Alps with the Carthaginian army, his elephants along for the ride. Most artistic depictions of this great feat emphasized Hannibal's courage and the grandeur of his assault, with the general and his men astride elephants towering over their troops. But in 1812, the British artist Turner created, sensationally, his painting Hannibal crossing the Alps, and in the ultimate visual inversion, he put an elephant at the center of the scene, but as you can see from the link we have sent to you, it is incredibly tiny. You have to squint to see it. The gargantuan beast is rendered as almost nothing because of the larger towering might of the mountains and the incredible surrounding swirling snow. Turner thus reminds us that even the might of an elephant is ultimately terrifically tiny in God's world. We, in turn, will ponder how one tiny people endured a people that even gargantuan elephant-like empires could not overcome. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.